Welcome everyone to episode 161 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about Isaiah Thomas going to the Denver Nuggets, the big trade that happened Thursday night, and some of the other free agent signings from the past couple days. Before we get underway, reminder you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I'm melting physically, but outside of that, good.
That's good to hear. You're back on a normal sleep schedule, I'm assuming?
Trying to. I'll say as much, because the heat is really messing up my rhythm. Like, We sleep, you know, with the window right out to where the sun goes up, and it's just like every morning at 5.
Oh boy,
it's so hot in there that you can't. So I'm actually considering just moving the entire bed into the living room instead.
Well, geez, get me more excited about coming to Denmark next week. Damn.
Oh yeah. No, well, you're staying at a hotel.
That's true.
So
that's true.
That will definitely be, and you're staying right at the water.
That's also true. Yeah, I'll get a nice breeze going, hopefully.
Yes, you will. And if not, you know, just drink beer.
Right. That always cools me down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was asking about the sleep schedule because, you know, it had been pretty quiet. We were actually planning to do a summer league pod today. So I sent an email to you last night, and then, like, literally 45 minutes afterward, Woj bomb, Woj bomb, Woj bomb. So we got... Mm-hmm. You know, Thursday, we recorded this on Friday. Yesterday was my 4-year wedding anniversary. So I was out to dinner with my wife, and I get the Shams bomb about David Nwaba getting his qualifying offer re-signed. And the first thing I think is just like, oh my God, I'm so excited to check Twitter when I get home and see Mort's feed, because I'm sure he's just going to be pissed.
Rescinded. Unfortunately, yeah. not re-signed.
Oh,
yeah, I wish.
Sorry. Did I say re-signed? Yes, rescinded.
Yeah. Just thank you, Brian, because just getting my hopes up there for a second. Like, did I miss right. a report?
No.
Right.
Rescinded.
No.
Yes.
Rescinded. Yeah.
And then I get home and, you know, things are. I let the dog out. I'm going to go to sleep early. When I'm with the dog, I get the first one about Isaiah Thomas. I'm like, all right, this is fine. I can still. We'll just talk about this in the morning. And then, like, I am getting ready for bed, and then I get the one about Jeremy Lin, and then I get the one a minute later about the Fareed and Daryl Arthur dump, and then I'm like, all right, I'm staying up till 3 o'clock. So,
yeah.
Basically,
my life.
Yeah, the moral of the story is, it's a miracle I've been married 4 years, and my wife is a saint, and yeah, she came downstairs at 3 a.m. and was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Like, oh, you know, that's like, my wife is used to that. If I go to bed at 6 a.m., she's like, ah, okay, honey, that's nice. Did Woj tweet anything?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
We're both.
You didn't? So you just wasted a whole night? Yeah. Okay. I'm used to it.
Yeah. We're both very lucky men is the moral of the story. But let's go into the first of the three Woj bombs that dropped. Isaiah Thomas to the Denver Nuggets on a 1-year, $2 million veteran minimum deal. Hardly the Brinks truck moment that he expected last summer. But What do you think about that move, Mort? You like it for the Nuggets?
I mean, how could you not?
Yeah.
It's Isaiah Thomas at the minimum. That's that's ridiculous value. And honestly, I think he's dramatically underpaid.
Yeah.
I get that the market set the price and everything, but he's obviously a lot better than a minimum deal.
Right.
So for Denver to get him in there and just be another scorer/facilitator, like, they are so going to have the best offense in the league next year.
Yeah.
It's uncanny. I don't want to give him, like, major minutes in front of Jamal Murray because I think his development is just so crucial. But having the luxury of having an Isaiah Thomas coming off the bench when you need buckets is just fantastic.
Yeah. He's going to win Sixth Man of the Year next year, right?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I mean, I hope he does. That would reset his value a little bit.
Because they, like, Will Barton is now going to move into their starting lineup because Wilson Chandler got traded. So they need that kind of microwave scorer. Like, I agree with you. It sucks for Isaiah that he's you know, if I'm Denver, I am not starting Isaiah Thomas. I agree that Jamal Murray is the future. Jamal Murray and Gary Harris is going to be one of the best backcourts in the league, if they're not already. So, like, you need to continue developing those guys alongside one another. That said, their backup point guard situation left a lot to be desired. Now they have an Isaiah Thomas who, you know, get your jokes off, but, like, a year ago he was fifth in MVP voting. He had 27 points a game. Like, he is a liability on defense, yes. He will be picked on relentlessly in the playoffs, yes. But he gives them another, like, explosive scorer next to, I mean, all five of their starters could also really pour in points. Murray, Harris, Barton, Jokic, Millsap. Like, their top six is really effing loaded. So
completely.
Yeah, I mean, I love the move for Denver. I feel genuinely bad for Isaiah Thomas because had he become a free agent last summer,
right?
He's probably looking at a $100 million deal, yeah, or close to it. It's just like, it's so crappy that the luck of the draw for free agency is just like, if you were a free agent in 2016, you cashed in. If you were a free agent in 2018, you more likely got screwed. And that sucks.
Yep, absolutely. Though I will say, he's still getting $2 million. So yeah, like for the average Joe, like, right, you know, but I catch your drift and I agree. I mean, obviously $100 million would have been much preferable. Yeah. He'll earn some of it back in what amounts to become a true insane 2019 summer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm going to write about it before I leave because I'm just like, I'm looking ahead and there are maybe six guys who deserve max contracts next summer, and that includes Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I think, more than a third of the league can create max space. A couple teams can create double maxes. So we're going to have a situation where there are going to be way too many teams, way too few max guys. They're all going to be left at, like, the, you know, if Jimmy Butler and Kyrie decide to play together, if that rumor is true, and they go to, like, the Clippers or the Nets or something, then that's two maxes on one team. Like, it's we're set up for a situation where a lot of desperate teams overpay these, like, second and third tier guys. But I also think, like, the market is just going to be so bloated because so many guys have taken one-year deals that there are going to still be a bunch of guys who get left out in the cold again. And yep, I hope, for Isaiah Thomas' sake, that he is not that, because this probably, hopefully he comes back from the hip injury. And, like, you know, he was better with the Lakers than he was with the Cavs. The Cavs stint was an absolute disaster. He says he's pain-free now, so hopefully, like, a year removed from this hip injury, he can rehab his value in Denver. They're going to play at a fast pace. He's going to put up a lot of points. Hopefully he gets that one big deal because he's already, what, coming on 30. Like, this is probably his last chance for, like, a big multi-year deal. So,
right,
you know, I really hope for his sake that he does play well and for Denver's sake that he plays well because it, I mean, I, you know, we made our jokes about the Brinks truck thing. Like, if a team gave him a 5-year max deal last summer, that was going to be a mistake. But, like, you said it, he's better than a $2 million player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you know who the winner is going to be next year?
Who?
Like, after the team that stays, you know, logical.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And doesn't overpay for someone. Like, yeah, a team that reads what's going on and goes, you know what? I'm not going to go crazy for, you know, a seventh man and right, pay him $25 million a year.
Yeah. The team that, like, waits until July 10th to make their first signing.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's what, I mean, it's going to be, in a weird way, it's going to be a reprise of 2016 where you have guys like Evan Turner and Kent Bazemore and Mozgov, Deng, Noah all getting overpaid. But it's going to happen quickly. And you're right. The teams that sit out that first wave, there is still going to be a lot of role players and rotation players deserving of big contracts that, you know, once that cap space starts to dry up, they're going to get desperate again. So, yeah, it's going to be, it's not going to be a good summer to have cap space if you're not a contender. I'll say that much.
So are you saying the Bulls' plan of just hitting a home run in 2019 is invalid?
We'll get to the Bulls later. Let's go to the Atlanta side of things next, because that was also... there was some confusion on Twitter when this deal broke. So the Nets traded Jeremy Lin to Atlanta for a 2020 second-round pick and the rights to Isaiah Cournier. If I said that right, I think I'm... Mm-hmm. Whatever. Woj said he's probably never going to come over. They gave up a 2025 second-round pick and the rights to swap 2023 second-rounders as well, just to get Lin's salary off their books. And then the Nets use that space to acquire Kenneth Faried, Darrell Arthur, a top 12 protected 2019 pick, and a 2020 second-round pick from Denver. They sent out Isaiah Whitehead, who the Nuggets are going to waive. So let's look at it from the Hawks' perspective first, because I think the big question that I saw on Twitter last night was, well, if the Hawks had the cap space to just... They didn't need to have Brooklyn as an intermediary. Why did they not just take Faried and Arthur and get the pick from Denver?
Because they wanted Jeremy Lin.
I think it's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're actively shopping Dennis Schroeder. Mm-hmm. Having another point guard there is necessary because you can't, you know, trot out Trae Young and play him 38 minutes a game.
Right.
Like, and Jeremy Lin, like, we've forgotten about him because he's been injured. Mm-hmm. He's good.
Yeah.
He's actually good. Like, he's a perfectly capable pick and roll player. He can shoot a little bit. He can drive. He's got weird hair and will have a huge fan base following, which the Hawks are in sore need of.
Yeah.
This is just a low gamble.
Yeah.
Or a low risk gamble, I should say.
Right. I think you're spot on with the Schroeder thing. Like, this is a precursor to a Schroeder move. They wanted to have a point guard in place. So, as you said, Trae Young's not playing 38 minutes a night. Devil's advocate argument is, okay, you could probably get a point guard, like a cheap veteran point guard, and not have to spend $12.5 million on Jeremy Lin and, you know, get a first-round pick out of Denver instead. So, you know, there are arguments both ways. I think for Atlanta, they have a bunch of potential picks coming their way anyway. They already just spent three this year on Young, Kevin Huerter, and Omari Spellman. Like, there's only so many young guys they can have at one time. So maybe they're, you know, maybe they're, like, looking down the line and they're saying, like, all right, we don't necessarily need a 2019 first-round pick that is more likely than not to be in the late teens, early 20s. Like, we just don't value that as much as Jeremy Lin's leadership. They can always flip him again. I mean, there's nothing preventing them from dumping him at the deadline. You know, if they're looking ahead to free agency in 2019 and they're saying, we're not, you know, we aren't realistically going to be contenders for Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or Kawhi Leonard, they could flip Lin at that point to a Houston or to the Lakers for Deng, for Ryan Anderson, spend an extra year of their cap space and get more assets that way. So I think we just need to, like, grade Atlanta as an incomplete, basically.
Yeah, I mean, or just grade them appropriately, which to me is a B. They get a good player.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know. I mean, when you look at the grand scheme of things, it doesn't fit in terms of their where they are in the rebuilding process. All that, it's fine. I get it. But you still got one hell of a player for virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot look at that and go, oh, that's a loss or an incomplete. That's a win. That's a win. The thing is, if they want to lose next year, then obviously you're looking at it from a different perspective.
Right.
Thing is, do they want to lose? Do we know that? Some teams just do things that are quite illogical.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought the Pacers were doing last year, and look how that worked out. Yeah, like, the East is... That 7 and 8 spot in the East is so soft.
It's wide open.
Yeah, they're like, the top 6 are pretty sealed in with, like, Boston, Toronto, Philly in the top 3, and then Washington, Indiana, Milwaukee, 4, 5, 6 in some order. Maybe there's some flipping in there, but, like, I feel confident in those 6 teams, barring catastrophic injuries, making the playoffs. But after that, like, I have no... Miami, probably. Charlotte. Detroit. Maybe, probably, but, like, yeah,
it could be,
like, it wouldn't totally shock me if Atlanta turned out to be a 35 win team,
right? And that could be enough.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, let's look at the Brooklyn perspective now, because I wrote a thing. I think it's online already, or it will be shortly, at B-Ball Breakdown. This is what I stayed up until 3 a.m. writing, just because Sean Marks is, like, he's my spirit animal. He's just, he's really, it's like the ghost of Sam Hinkie had departed Philadelphia and just walked up to Brooklyn and has taken over that Nets team. Like, we'll go back to this, but, like, I do wonder why the perception is different of what Marks is doing and what Hinkie did. You know, because, like, Hinkie caught so much backlash, but Marks seems to be getting off kind of scot-free, but we can revisit that. But, you know, getting, like you said it, Jeremy Lin's a productive player, but, like, this is just what Sean Marks does. He uses his cap space, he picks up additional first rounders, picks up second rounders. Like, it's just, this is what rebuilding teams should do. I don't know how many times we can say it, but if you're a rebuilding team, there is no point in, like, chasing mediocre role players and signing them to long-term deals unless you are looking to do it to flip them later, which is effectively what he did with Jeremy Lin. He signed Lin to a 3-year, $36 million deal. He did it with Trevor Booker, 2 years, $18 million. Like, he did that in the summer of 2016. He didn't overpay those guys. He just knew we need contracts that we could eventually flip for salary matching purposes, use those to get more picks, rent out our cap space for a year or two when it doesn't matter. Again, we're not going to be free agent players. No team, no, like, top tier guy is going to come to the 25 win Brooklyn Nets. It's just not going to happen. So get more draft assets. Now the Nets, like, finally we are past the Billy King disaster. The Nets have all of their own first round picks moving forward. Now they also have this Denver pick. They've drafted pretty well. It, you know, all things considered, like, for what they've been, the hand they were dealt, getting guys like Caris LeVert and Jared Allen in recent years, like, they've drafted well in the late teens, early 20s. So I'm excited to see what happens with this Nets team now.
Yeah, that's just two incoming picks. Okay, so the Denver pick might not be very high because they project to be very good. So top 20, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's fine. That's just an additional first-rounder. We've seen what teams can do with multiple first-rounders. It gives them some flexibility. You can move up in the draft. You can stay and get two rookies and see if one of them just pans out, which is really the same Hinkie method. Like, get as many chips in as you can. Some will fail, some won't. And, you know, that's how it is. And Sean Marks, to his credit, has understood that and is going all the way. To answer your question regarding, like, the perception, I think he's just less blatantly open about the tanking part.
Yeah.
Mostly because they haven't had to tank.
Right.
Because of that horrible trade.
Right, right. Yeah.
I think that's really the only difference. And then the league, you know, going with the whole, oh, well, we know their situation. We feel kind of bad for them. So, you know, whichever way they're going to acquire assets or acquire talent, we're sticking behind them. Which is, yeah. Like, you can argue that, like, that mentality, but yeah, I think that there's some leeway from them, or some leniency, I should say, because of the situation that Billy King put them in.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and because, as you said, they have not had the incentive to tank for multiple years because they haven't had their own first-rounders, so that gives them no reason to try to make their first-rounders better. If anything, they have less incentive to tank. And, like, yeah, in their defense, again, they have signed veterans, Lynn, Booker, etc., Bojan Bogdanovic. You know, they flipped those guys. Like, they flipped all three of those guys. They flipped Thad Young, and they turned them into picks, which is, again, the right thing to do. But, yeah, you're probably right. It's just, you know, it's not like Sam Hinkie inherited a gold mine here. Like, he came in right after the Andrew Bynum trade. It's just, it's funny, the difference in perception, but
look, he died for every sin.
That's true. Right?
And every sin moving forward.
If he was going to be reincarnated in Sean Marks' body, that's cool. I'm happy. Like, this Nets team, like, they're not going to be good next year. They're not going to be good the year after. But, like, they are laying the foundation to be very good down the line. They're going to have a lot of cap space next summer. not to revisit this 2019 talk, but, like, all four of the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nets, and the Knicks are going to have some major cap space. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about, like, guys being drawn to premium markets, that situation is going to repeat itself next year. Like, you know, going back right. to Jimmy Butler and Kyrie Irving, if they want to team up together, there's a world in which the Nets could get both of those guys.
And that's why they're not going to tank.
Yeah, right.
And also, are we absolutely 100% certain that these Nets can't make the playoffs in the East?
Oh, no. You're doing it again. You're buying in the Nets again.
Yeah, I am.
Yes, I'm absolutely certain the Nets will not make the playoffs in the East.
We'll revisit that one, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. When we do our Atlantic Division preview, maybe you'll convince me.
All right.
All right, so from the Denver side of things, I mean, the logic is clear. They just wanted to get under the luxury tax. They dumped mm-hmm. Wilson Chandler earlier. They needed to dump Fareed and Arthur to get far enough under that there. I saw someone tweet out that there's like $5 million in unlikely incentives for guys like Jokic, I think Millsap, and there was one other guy, Gary Harris. So like they needed to give themselves an additional, I think they have like almost $9 million to get to the luxury tax right now. So they needed to give themselves like a big buffer just in case yep. all of those guys hit their incentives. But what do you think about this? I saw, you know, again, some criticism last night or just some people saying like, well, you know, it's your owner's job to pay the luxury tax. Why are you giving up an asset just to duck it for 1 year? Where do you stand on that?
I get it. I don't think you should end up in a situation where you have to sacrifice assets just to get out of some monetary issues. Having said that, you know, there are differences in NBA ownership. Some are significantly richer or wealthier than others. So that plays in. And simultaneously, you could also argue that at least the Nuggets are doing something accurate in the sense that the guys that they're paying big money are at least worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Like even Paul Millsap, like, yes, he's overpaid given the age that he's in, but like he's still highly effective, highly impactful. Like he's not a net negative.
Right.
So they've spent well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's they haven't signed an Evan Turner or an Jan Mahimi.
Right.
So their money is well distributed, well, which I think counts for something.
Plumlee wasn't great.
But for the most part, yeah. they've invested pretty wisely, right?
Right, right.
But no, I overall, I agree. I don't think it's a problem unless you become, you know, one of the repeater tax team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go into that and you're in the tax so frequently that you have to pay up more,
mm-hmm.
that's an issue. Like, yeah. That's only, like, the major market teams, like the Knicks
mm-hmm.
and the Lakers, that can handle that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get the criticism, but, like, everyone saw this coming. Like,
yeah, obviously.
So, you know, you could maybe take issue with, like, only being able to top 12 protect that 2019 first. Maybe you'd rather, like, lottery protect or, like, top 18, but no team's taking on $20 million without a lightly protected first. Like, I think this is if your entire mission was to get under the luxury tax, this is realistically probably the best you could do. I get it. Like, it'd be great if you could just say like all billionaires should just pay the luxury tax and that should be that. But as you said, that's not reality. Like, you know, we could go into the economic side of things, but that's just not feasible for a lot of these small market teams, especially. So I get the criticism. If it became a habit, that's one thing. If it's just like a one-time thing, and Matt Moore of the Action Network, who lives in Denver, is like close to the team, he was going through the Denver logic last night, and he's basically saying like, look, Denver's got a lot of really young players. Like, they're most of their core, you know, Jokic, Murray, Harris, you got guys on the bench like Malik Beasley, Tyler Lydon, mm-hmm. Trey Lyles, like all those guys are really young already. There just isn't really room in the rotation anyway. Like, if Denver's going to be, you know, a top four, top five seed in the West, they're probably going to get a pick in the 20s. There's probably not going to be room in the rotation for that guy next year anyway. We've seen that with Malik Beasley already. So, like, that asset has less value for them than it does another team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I get what he's saying about that. Here's the thing, though. A first-round draft pick is also a trade asset.
Yeah.
So you do lose out on that. I agree with Matt to his overall point about it, like if you keep the draft pick. But it's still a tool you can use to strengthen your team in some capacity, even mm-hmm. if you don't use it on a player.
Yeah.
And that's really what I'm against. Like in terms of asset acquisition, that's why it's so essential. Like, we'll talk about the Bulls a little bit later on, but like the rumored OKC trade with Melo going to the Bulls, mm-hmm. like that's centered around a 2022 first rounder. That's 4 years down the line. Like that presents value from now and 4 years forward. Like the Bulls could move that pick if that the deal is completed, obviously, and that's what they get. Like that pick could be moved from now and anywhere from now and 4 years, making it an asset,
right.
Like a trade asset. And that's why I don't think it's smart to give up those. But I get it. Like you have to pay to get, stocky contracts off your cap. Like right. Obviously, who's not? There isn't an NBA team out there going, oh, you know what? We like you so much and we're going to do it for free.
Yeah, no, right.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. We believe we're going to unlock Kenneth Faried. We're going to be the team to make it work.
Yeah. I will say as much, though. I kind of like when teams are put in a position where they have to pay because they've spent too much money
mm-hmm.
on bad players.
Mm.
Like you just mentioned Plumlee.
Yeah.
That's one bad deal.
Right.
So I really can't look at Denver as, oh, I'm, be schadenfroh or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But like teams who use money badly, like the Lakers did on Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng, mm-hmm. like having to sacrifice D'Angelo Russell, like you brought it on yourself.
right.
Like I don't have a problem with that overall because, yeah, I think it was dumb to sacrifice D'Angelo, but what can you do?
Right. Yeah, you had it coming. Don't spend you money had it coming. Poorly.
Like then don't spend dumb money. And again, this is going to be a thing. You just mentioned it like 10 minutes ago. Like the 2019 market
mm-hmm.
is going to be absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see teams overpay.
Mm-hmm.
And in about 18 months to 24 months, so in a year and a half and 2 years, we're going to have this debate on this very podcast yeah. about some team that really messed up a year from now.
Right.
Who have to pay up to get rid of some of their bad contracts. It's yep. going to happen. The NBA is a circle.
Yeah, it really is. All right, let's go into some of the other signings that have happened in the past couple days. This first one, we can't remember if we hit on it in the last episode, so apologies in advance if we did. But Yusuf Nurkic is re-signing with the Portland Trailblazers. 4 years, $48 million. I'm shocked. That's a great value for Portland, right?
Yep. Yeah, it is. Yep, we were, I don't remember where we were at when we had that episode almost a year ago when we were doing the whole, what should this restricted free agent get?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think we kind of settled in to, 50, somewhere between 15 and 18 million.
Mm-hmm.
Someone out there can go back and find the episode right. and retell it to us because we can't be bothered, apparently. But I think that's where we ended up.
Yeah.
For them to get him at 12, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Huge deal. I like his contract so much right now. And like that's going to go a long way in terms of how he plays. So if he mm-hmm. has a disappointing season, you go, well, it's only for $12 million. It's not right. 24.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, he's only making $7 million more than Myers Leonard.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep,
which is
that's pretty big.
Yeah, like I think yep. that's all. It's that speaks for itself. Like he's 23, he's going to be their starting center presumably for the next 4 years, ideally. Like,
yeah,
he still has some serious upside. Yes, you'd like to see him get stretch out to 3-point range. Yes, he might get played off the floor against these smaller lineups with Golden State, blah blah blah. But like. There is value in having a competent starting center to make it through an 82-game regular season. Yeah. And then when you get into these small ball matchups, you figure it out. Maybe that's when you tap into a Myers Leonard or something. Or maybe you just
Zach Collins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I mean,
there's no way they move him, right? Like, when you're on such a high-value contract, like, they keep him for all 4 years, right?
I would hope so.
I can't imagine. Like I think a team would have to overpay to get him on this good deal. Like this yeah. is an asset. This is what we're right. talking about in terms of assets.
Yeah.
A guy like that locked up for 4 years at that salary, like I can't imagine Portland messing this up.
Right.
But unless, then again,
unless they need it for like salary matching purposes and they're getting a good player in return. Like they're not going to have right. to dump additional assets to get off of that deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, exactly. That's kind of my point. And look, good on Portland for finally spending their money wisely.
Right. Yeah, it's been a while.
It has. I mean, Evan Turner got $22 million over the same amount of years.
Yeah. Alan Crabb got $27 million more.
Yep. Yep. That he did. Yep.
Enough said. Devin Booker. This one, man. So he re-signed with Phoenix on a 5-year max worth $158 million projected, based on the $109 million salary cap for next year. I did a thing for the step back with Jeremy Lambert, where we debated who you'd rather have on their respective max: Devin Booker at 158 or Andrew Wiggins at 148. I took the Booker side, he took the Wiggins side. He didn't feel strongly about Wiggins. He was just like, which side do you want? And I was like, I want Booker. He's like, okay, fine. But holy shit, man, that was my first exposure to Devin Booker hive on Twitter. It's real. Like, there are way more Suns fans out there than I anticipated.
There is, yeah. And I get it. Like, we talked about this just before we started recording. There are a lot of Devin Booker stans on Twitter, and I kind of get it, because, look, let me just preface this by saying I love the analytics crowd. Mm-hmm. Analytics is a big part in educating oneself in basketball, in particular the NBA, because so many stats are available, and you need someone to, let's be honest, dumb it down for people like me.
Right, sure.
That is a hardcore necessity.
Yeah.
And but the analytics crowd were too harsh on Devin Booker over the first 2 years of his career.
Yeah.
Here he was, a 19-year-old coming into the league, and he was scoring, he was getting hype, and that scoring continued in the second season. And instead of really looking at his age and going, oh, he's actually producing greatly, he's just like, there are certain severe lacks with him, yeah, but at that age, like, it's fine. Instead of doing that, it was like, oh, he's trash. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be good. Like, right. He's just horrible. What, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I get where they were coming from. They were looking at it from a very deep statistical perspective. I get it. I get the whole shebang. Here's the thing, though. At this point, at this very recording, Devin Booker has just completed his third NBA season, and he's just 21 years old.
Yeah.
He averaged 25 points last year. 25. And you cannot tell me that a guy who averages 25 a game, who can play pick and roll basketball, and who is developing as a rebounder and developing as a playmaker, is not going to get better.
Right.
You cannot tell me that.
Yeah.
So you can debate all you want about the value of the contract. That's fine. If someone wants to argue, oh, he should have maxed out at 120 instead of 158. Fine. I'm not going to go into that. I get it. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But don't sit there and go, oh, this guy shouldn't have been re-signed to anything remotely like 70 million had been the max.
Right.
No, because he's 21, and in every year he's played, he's taken significant steps forward.
Right.
Like, unlike Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, or I was going to say, he's not Zach LaVine, basically.
Also that.
Yeah.
But let's stick with the Wiggins thing, because that's what your article was
saying. Right.
Like,
right.
People looked at Wiggins and they saw, you know, the increased scoring. Where was everything else?
Yeah.
Like, at least Booker followed up with, you know, being able to get to the line more, increasing his three-point volume.
Yep.
Like, becoming better, like, refining his on-ball defense, refining his playmaking, getting more active vocally, getting into the paint a little bit more often. Like, he did things that you could see during games that were, oh, he didn't do this last year. Whereas Wiggins, like, it was just higher volume, and that was it.
Right, yeah. There have been, like, steady signs of progress throughout Booker's career.
Right.
Yeah.
There has. And so I have no problem with this contract.
Yeah. I don't either. I mean, it begs the question of, like, what's the alternative for Phoenix? You could say they could push it off for a year, but then you risk pissing off Devin Booker. Then you risk him going out, signing an offer sheet with another team that's shorter, lets him get into free agency, like basically what happened with Gordon Hayward in Utah. He takes a 4-year deal with a 4th-year player option. Then you just lost 2 years of team control on your best player. Yeah, I mean, like you, I understand the arguments against it. His defense is not very good.
It's not.
You know, his 3-point volume, as you said, has gone up, but he's still, his efficiency overall is not great. He shot 43.2% last year. There, you know, maybe there's some concern of, is he like just a good stats, bad team guy? And like, he doesn't contribute that much to winning. But as you said, he's 21 years old. He just averaged nearly 25 points a night. I looked it up. He's one of only 4 players in NBA history to have at least 24 points, 4 assists, and 4 rebounds before turning 22. I think the other 3, I'm pretty sure I have this right, was LeBron, T-Mac, and MJ. So, like, I'm not putting him in that conversation. No. You know, those 3 guys are all better than I expect Devin Booker ever to become. Right. But, like, he's just in rare statistical territory. And right. Again, maybe it's just a volume play. Maybe now that they have Ayton, and maybe now that they have Ariza and Bridges, those guys are going to take touches away from Booker. His stats are going to go down, and this contract's going to look worse in a year. Conversely, now that he has like real teammates, and it, you know, Josh Jackson's going to be a year older, and he's looking good in summer league. TJ Warren's still good and underrated. Like, the third best player on his team is not going to be Eric Bledsoe for 3 games. Like, that Phoenix team was a outright disaster last year. So now that he has real teammates, there's a chance he gets better. And they like don't have great options at the point right now. It's Brandon Knight or Elliot Kobo. And both of us love Elliot Kobo, but like, I'm not counting him as a great option as a rookie coming in.
Right. No, absolutely.
So like, I'm assuming they're going to rely on Booker more as a playmaker, which he has, as you said, he's grown significantly in that regard. So like, that was my whole thing when arguing for Booker versus Wiggins. It was, I get the argument, even now, I still get the argument for Wiggins. Like, in terms of physical tools, Wiggins, you're perceiving him to have the higher ceiling, but at a certain point, it's like, he's 4 years into his career, when is he going to put it together? Whereas Booker, like, he is progressively putting it together. You are seeing progress every year. I'm fine with it. I like you. Yep. I don't have any problem with that deal. A Phoenix team that hasn't had a star since like Steve Nash and Amari. Like, what was the alternative?
Agreed. There was none. Like, Zach LaVine?
Right.
Like, no. Yeah. Jabari. Oh my God. No, but like, to your point, the assist percentage, right? The year before last, so in the 2016-2017, his assist percentage was 16.3.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, 24.4.
Yeah.
And he did that while only increasing his turnover percentage by 1%.
Man, that's crazy.
That's good. Yeah. That shows at least an improved understanding of the game.
Right.
And I get the whole, you know, the advanced metrics doesn't love him thing. I get it. But there's more to it. Like, you have to combine both the factors. You can't just read basketball out from a spreadsheet.
Right.
Just as you cannot just watch basketball with your eyes and go, oh, that's good. No, right. You have to combine the two.
Right.
And right here, I think Devin Booker is very interesting because you have a sort of a conflict. Like, the eye test is very positive in regards to him, whereas the advanced metrics are not, because he has these very, should we say, open weaknesses that are very obvious. But then he does so many things, like, that doesn't show up in a stat sheet, that is just so amazing. Like, the just the spacing alone he provides when he's out there, when he's not on the ball, like, entire defenses are zoned in on him, looking for it.
Yeah.
That just carries so much weight, like, down the line of the other players on the basketball court.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, that's really the best thing we can sum it up with. We'll see. I fully expect him to become an all-star. I fully expect him to become, you know, down the line, better defensively. I expect him to become one of these guys who, you know, we'll see in the top 5, top 3, maybe even leading the league in scoring at one point. I mean, look, I wouldn't even be surprised if he did it next year or this year.
Right.
I mean, this upcoming season.
He didn't qualify for the scoring leaderboard last year, but if he did, among all players, he was 10th in scoring last year.
Right. At 21.
Yeah. And, like, He's taking a steady, like, his volume of three-pointers has steadily increased each season. Mm-hmm. He went from 3.8 as a rookie, and he shot 34.3%. Last year, he was at 7.1, and he's at 38.3%. And again, it's like, now that he has real teammates, teams aren't going to be able to double-team him every time. Like, they're going to have to double-team Ayton sometimes. They can't leave yep. Bridges and Ariza open on the wing. So, like, I fully expect him, even if his scoring average goes down next season, which it might, because again he's gonna like share touches with actual NBA players. I would hope his efficiency to hit an all-time high.
He had a true shooting percentage of 56, and I think a lot of the backlash on him was he turns the ball over a lot, and his true shooting percentage isn't 60 sure. or something elite like that, because we've grown accustomed now to some of the best perimeter players being able to have these seasons of, true shooting percentage of 60-63%.
Yeah.
But let's just take a minute, because that's insane. Like, those guys are getting all that, accolade because they are as efficient. Like, it's fine if he doesn't become James Harden.
Right.
Like, it's okay. Not everyone needs to be James Harden to be worth their contract.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Right. Okay, Brook Lopez is the next one, going to the Milwaukee Bucks, 1 year, $3.4 million. Is there anything else to say aside from I love this deal?
It just fits, right? Yeah. Like, here's the thing with Giannis, right? He needed shooters at more positions, and now you have the ability to pluck him into a lineup where your center is shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could you imagine, Giannis in a spaced out offense?
No, I mean, with like an actual coach and Mike Budenholzer rather than Jason right. Kidd or Joe Prunty.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have Chris Middleton still there being able to take on secondary ball handling.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I am really excited about the Bucks this year.
I am too. Like, I really think either the Bucks or the Pacers, it wouldn't totally shock me if they were a top three seed. Not even top four. Like, both of them are going to be competing for that 4-5 spot. But, like, right. I am very, very high on what both of those teams have done this summer. I have no idea what the Lakers are going to do at center now. I kind of just assumed Lopez was going back there. So, like, are we really...
JaVale?
Yeah. Is it going to be JaVale McGee at center? Or is it going to be, like, Kuzma?
Oh, God.
Like, what are they going to do?
Okafor? Here's the thing, though. At least Kyle Kuzma won't see a minute at small forward this year.
That is true. Yeah, I just don't know. I guess Greg Monroe is still floating out there. Okafor.
Oh my God, he is.
Yeah.
I had completely forgotten about Greg Monroe, and that's not to be cruel, but
right,
I had.
Right. Yeah. I'm very, very intrigued to see what the Lakers are doing at center.
If you have the opportunity to sign Lance Stephenson instead of retaining your starting center, obviously
sure.
do it.
Or Julius Randle, yeah. Who
would... Oh, yeah, yeah, renounce Julius Randle so you can sign Rajon Rondo. Yeah, yep. Obviously. Right. Yep.
Good choices all around. The Spurs declined to match Kyle Anderson's offer sheet with the Grizzlies, which is 4 years, around $37 million. Are you surprised by that?
Why don't we have Sarah on this podcast right now?
Because she would get fired.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. She is very smart. I think, honestly, this is like her departure came at the perfect time, because otherwise she would have never gotten a job in the NBA had she been able to voice her opinions on what has happened with the Spurs over the past year. it was actually just a stroke of perfect fortune for her.
Yep.
But, yeah.
I thought that was a good contract.
I did too.
Like, I don't understand why the Spurs would decline this, unless they are, like, as I stated on the last podcast, like, if they are just going, mission clean slate.
Right.
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like they're sending very conflicting signals right now, or they aren't, but just media reports in general about their intentions with the Kawhi trade have suggested, especially from Zach Lowe, that... like, Zach has argued they should be just straight up full on rebuild, but
right.
they reportedly don't want to do that. So if they don't want to do that, Kyle Anderson's a good player. It surprises me that they didn't match it, but
Great pickup for Memphis, though.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, like every team in the West almost got better this summer, with like probably the exception of the Clippers. I don't know that they got that much worse, but just by virtue of like not keeping up in the arms race, they're gonna fall back.
And the Spurs.
Bit. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess we'll see what happens with Kawhi. But I mean, if Kawhi comes back, they'll have gotten better compared to last year, just by virtue of having Kawhi Leonard on their team. Speaking of the Clippers, Luke Mbah-Mute going there on a one-year $4.3 million deal.
One I didn't get.
Yeah, it's the other half of their... They used part of their mid-level exception on Mike Scott. This is the other part of it.
Right. Those are two win-now moves. Like, look, let me just preface this by saying, you know, Luke Mbah-Mute at $4.3 million is a freaking steal.
Yeah.
That's completely fine. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. I just don't get what the Clippers are trying to do. Like, why not go hardcore after Mario Hezonja instead, who seems to fit your age bracket?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote about the Clippers for Give Me Sport. I don't know when it's going up, but basically...
Well, our editor is in Las Vegas right now, having very, very much fun at the buffet tables. So.
Yes, yeah. All due respect to Mark Deeks. I hope he is enjoying a good time in Vegas, the most debaucherous city in the country. So Steve Ballmer gave a quote to Zach Lowe in October of last year that basically said something along the lines of, like, I want to win. I don't like losing. I'm never going to go into a full tank because I think it sends a bad message to free agents. So I think that's the logic behind these moves. Like, if you look at the Clippers' top six, you've got Beverly. They re-signed Avery Bradley. You've got Gallo, Tobias Harris, Marcin Gortat. You have Lou Williams. Now you have Luke Mbah-Mute. You have Mike Scott. You've got the young kids. You got Shea and Jerome Robinson. Mm. We don't know what's going to happen with Montrezl Harrell. Sam Decker's still out there as well. So, like, they have a decent top six. It's like, but you know... Gallo is almost certain to get hurt for 20 plus games. Like, they're just going to fall out of the... They can feign competitiveness, but then they're going to fall out of the playoff race and still get a top eight pick. And then next summer, this is what I wrote for them, is next summer they can also create $70 million in cap space. So if you're looking for the next super team, it could be the Clippers. If Kawhi Leonard wants to go to LA, but he doesn't want to play with LeBron... There's one other option, and they could Kawhi Leonard plus another star. They could get Kawhi plus Kyrie or Kawhi plus Jimmy. Like, the Clippers are going to have some serious options. Also, it just seems like since Jerry West came on board, they're running their franchise a lot more forward-looking, is the nicest way I could put it. Like,
logically?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I'm not... I have a sneaking suspicion that the Clippers are going to be major free agent players next year. So I think this year they're basically like, let's tread water. Let's pretend to compete for a playoff spot. We know we're not actually going to be in contention, but you know, we'll probably end up as like the third or the fourth worst team in the West, but we still could win 35 games, which is wild. It's wild that could be the third worst team in the West. But, you know, like, let's not send the message to free agents that we are tanking.
How pissed off would Lakers fans be if the Clippers ended up with Kyrie, Jimmy Butler, and Kawhi? Like, they would just totally upstage the LeBron signing.
Yeah. I don't know if that's possible.
If they traded for Kawhi this year and then dumped everything.
Yeah, I guess the question is how they get off the Gallo contract.
Picks, man.
Yeah.
They pull a Denver.
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Lou Williams is certainly movable.
Right. Yeah, it would be tough. I guess if those guys are willing to take a slight discount, it would definitely be doable. But man, that would be...
Lakers Twitter would break.
Oh my god. Yeah, could we talk about the Lakers for a second? I know we've talked about them a lot lately, but I like that Lakers fans have just been in their feelings about everyone else pointing out that LeBron going there is, like, he prioritized other things aside from basketball. And, like, Lakers fans are just so pissed off about it. Like, Jerry West gave a comment, I think it was to Lee Jenkins, the Sports Illustrated, where he's like, look, the Lakers didn't have to work hard to sign LeBron James. Like, they did nothing to get him. He just decided he wanted to go LA. There. And, like, Magic is there. Like, honestly, the thing they did is get Magic Johnson as their president. So he can, like, teach LeBron how to be, like, expand his business empire. But, like, he just wanted to move to LA. His family wanted to move to LA. He wanted to be affiliated with the Lakers brand. But, like, they didn't run their team well to go get him. And they're not in a better short-term spot to win a title than Houston or Philly would have been with LeBron. So it's like, he clearly prioritized other things.
Of course he did. And you know what? If I'm a Lakers fan, I don't worry about it.
No.
I just go, well, awesome. Yeah. Then it's awesome that he chose us.
Right. It's just really funny.
It's just weird. I think, it's the same with, they've been a struggling franchise for a while. Like, have you seen Knicks fans in regards to Kevin Knox right now?
Yes. MVP. This
MVP and, like, the guys on Twitter saying, like, if we redrafted, like, the whole draft right now, would he go number one? I'm asking you guys seriously. Look, the thing is, I kind of get it. When you have been a desperate franchise for so long and you finally get something that's very attractive, you want to cling on to it as much as you can. And you fall in love so much easier in that thing. Thing is, you know, you need to relax about it. That's not happening, but at least I get why. Right. I get why it's happening. Like, the psychological effect is real, especially with the Knicks fans. They've had nothing going for them for so long. Now they have a guy coming in being, like, second or third in summer league scoring. That's something that's good for them, and they look at that as this, it's, you know, the next coming of Michael.
Right. Well, I mean, they do have Kristaps, but they know that this season's going to suck because he's going to miss some or all of it. So, like,
Exactly. With the ACL tear, just, like, that brought them all down. So now they have something, you know, to be excited about, and that's fine. But, it's unfortunate that these things are happening, and I just hope both franchises kind of cool down a little bit before the season. Because I don't want Knicks fans to come out and be disappointed with Kevin Knox averaging 8 points a game in the first month.
Right.
Like, if that happens, like, he can still be a good player.
Yeah.
And conversely, with the Lakers, like, you still have LeBron, even if you might not be a favorite to win the title. You still have LeBron. You'll watch competitive basketball for the first time in years.
Yeah,
don't overthink it.
Imagine signing LeBron James and being butthurt about how the offseason went. Like, I don't care. I mean,
you mean like we are when we rag on the Rondo and the last season?
Yeah, but we're not Lakers fans, so luckily
this is true.
We can poke fun at the other moves they've made.
This is true.
All right, let's get back to the signings. James Ennis to the Houston Rockets, 2 years. I haven't seen the terms. Presumably a minimum deal, though, because I think they're saving their taxpayer MLE for a certain someone that rhymes with Schmarmelo Schmanthony.
Who the hell is that?
Second year player option on that deal for Ennis. Like, awesome.
I like it.
Awesome value.
Yeah. Like, he's a fine player. He can score, he can board, he can hit threes. He's sneaky athletic. Oh, you know what? I just found myself saying sneaky athletic. It's a horrible term because everyone uses it. He's athletic.
Right. Yeah,
he's athletic.
Yeah.
So if they can channel that energy and the athleticism into being like a really tough-minded defender, good on Houston.
Yeah, and I mean it just goes to the point of, like, there were so many articles after Ariza left and after Luke left. It was like, Houston's having the worst offseason, and we named them losers in our last episode of the offseason so far.
Right.
And it was like, I think Mark Stein was the one of the New York Times was like, all right, guys, like, let's pump our brakes a little bit. There's still a long time between now and the February trade deadline or, like, the buyout deadline. Like, what Houston looks like now is not what they will look like going into the playoffs. So, like, this Ennis signing was just a reminder that, like, all right, maybe our panic was a little bit overblown. Like, they're probably...
Well, easy. easy. It's still James Ennis, though.
I know, like,
this
but, like...
This is not a Trevor Ariza replacement.
Right.
But this is a Luka Bamute replacement.
Yeah, well, that's one half of what they needed to replace this summer.
I mean, yeah, but, like, we don't really know how everything right. is going to pan out with Melo.
Yeah.
Who's obviously going to end up there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I get it, but so far they've signed James Ennis. It's still a bad summer.
Yeah, and right, it is. I'm just saying it's not like the sky is not necessarily falling for them. There's still a lot of time for right. them to fix what, you know, find other role players to fill the roles at Ariza.
Absolutely. They have James Harden. The sky is not falling.
Right, and they have Chris Paul. We'll see what happens with Clint Capella. It sounds like they are still pretty far separated in terms of...
Qualifying offer. I'm calling it qualifying yeah,
I
offer.
Mean, there was so I think Tim McMahon of ESPN.com was one who said Capella wants a deal in like the 4-year, $100 million range, which is what guys like Steven Adams and Rudy Gobert got. Jonathan Feigen of the Houston Chronicle said on July 1st they offered him a 5-year, $85 million deal that could have rose to 90 with incentives. So. Yeah, there's some separation there, and it's going to be really interesting to see.
Well, not that much, though.
Yeah, I guess it's like...
$15 million total? That was
18... If it's a $90 million deal over 5 years, that's $18 million. And then
four, over five. Yeah, over five. Okay, yeah, there we go.
So
yep,
it's
yep.
like it's still that's a $7 million gap.
Yes, absolutely. I was just... Yep.
Yeah. Oh, okay. If it was over four, yeah. Stop haggling. Like, just right. cave to just 95 get... and call it a day, but...
Exactly. No, okay, makes sense. Yeah, I don't get why Houston is trying to lowball him here. Is that like are they trying to, you know, level out the CP3 overpay?
I think so. Yeah, just trying to
You shouldn't do that.
Right.
Like, just pay the bill.
Yeah. I know it's interesting that, you know, we said this going into the summer, like Tillman Fertitta was not the owner when they traded for CP3. He said he was going to pay the luxury tax, and he is going to. Whenever he signs Capella, they will be in the tax. But it does seem like he's getting a little skittish about that tax bill.
And unless, like, of course, the qualifying offer is picked up, then right. they won't. And if he leaves next year, they won't.
I think they still go into the tax if he picks up the qualifying offer. It won't be much, but...
Oh, okay, but then it would be pocket change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It'd be like a couple million over, they get Melo, that'll be a little bit more. Wayne Ellington is going back to Miami on a 1-year, $6.2 million deal. My only question is, like, how did no one outbid Miami for that?
Right. First of all, I'm just surprised that Miami understands that there is an alternative to actually paying someone for 4 years.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm left with. I'm very impressed that they understand the mechanisms of contract creation, that they can actually sign a guy for 1 year.
Sure.
Here's the kicker, though. This is a guy who I would probably actually sign for more than 1 year.
Yeah.
Especially because you're not going anywhere with all those contracts.
Right.
You're not going anywhere anyway. Sign him up. He's one of the league's best shooters. I cannot believe... someone else didn't outbid for his services. Like, he got $6.2 million. A team out there could easily just, you know, offer $8 million.
Yeah, like float the non-taxpayer mid-level.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, let's not play around and say he's not worth it.
No, he's definitely worth it. I know. It's one of those things where it's like, these are the types of signings when we say on July 1st, when you see an Ersan Ilyasova get that, like, wait, didn't Marco Bellinelli got 2 years, $12 million, didn't he? From the Spurs?
Yeah.
Like, who would you rather have on would you rather have Marco Bellinelli on 2 years, 12, or Wayne Ellington on 1 year, 6? I don't think it's even close.
No. I don't have an answer for that, because I'm looking at it. Marco is more of a playmaker. Ellington is just, like, the spot-up shooter, but... Here's the thing, his high volume is insane, so he just breaks up so many zones. Who do you got, since you're saying it's a no-brainer? I think it's
Ellington. I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I don't think... I think it is close. I think it is close, because you're getting more in Bellinelli.
I might just be scarred from, like, how relentlessly Boston targeted Bellinelli in the playoffs.
I think you are.
Yeah.
Because he can handle... He's also a slightly better defender than Ellington is. You know, I feel he's a better passer. There are just more. He can handle the offense. Like, you can have him dribble the ball up, initiate. You can actually ask him to play on the ball more extensively. So I think there is an added element of value. Having said that, like, because of their age, both are well over 30. Or wait, is Ellington, did he just turn 30?
I'm not sure.
I had a feeling both were like 32, but if there's a significant age gap, I would go Ellington.
Ellington is... He just turned 30 last October, so he'll be 31. All right.
Yep. Yeah. Then I don't think it's a no-brainer, but I will say that does it for me. Ellington is well on my part, but Bellinelli is good. Like, you of all people should know, even though he was targeted.
Yeah.
Like, he saved your ass on so many occasions.
I know, but that was just like a lot of it. Bellinelli just felt so fluky the entire time. Like, he takes
these horrendous shots. Oh, that's just who he is. He's Italian.
Yeah. It just takes, like, such bad shots, and you know they're going to dry up at some point. And then when they do, you're just like, oh, well, we saw this coming. Whereas Ellington, it's like, you're right. He is more limited in what he can do, but I think he's better in that role. Like, do you want Bellinelli initiating your offense that much? If you're in that position, you're probably in trouble.
Oh, yeah, screwed either way.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. Like, if for a team to run on, you know, maximum effort and all that, yes, Ellington is by far the easier plug-and-play guy.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's wrap up then with the Chicago Bulls, who have done a bunch of things that just seem to suggest a bigger move is coming. They were involved in the saddest trade possibly in NBA history. It was a three-team blockbuster in which Bismack Biyombo got sent back to Charlotte. Timofey Mozgov is going to the Magic. Jerian Grant is going to the Magic. And Julian Stone's non-guaranteed contract went to Chicago. So from Chicago's perspective, they were just clearing Jerian Grant's salary. And then, as we mentioned at the top of the episode, they, on Thursday, rescinded David Nwaba's offer sheet. His qualifying offer. It sounds like, according to Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, that their plan is to use that cap space to absorb someone, and then they'll try to re-sign him with the room mid-level exception.
Right.
That said, there was a report, I think it was from David Aldridge of NBA.com, that a bunch of teams have already been sniffing around him, the Lakers and the Spurs, among others.
Memphis as well. I know that actually if Kyle Anderson had been matched by San Antonio, Memphis would have presented an offer sheet to David Nwaba. I'm not sure about the worth.
Yeah.
I even think Casey Johnson actually reported it a few days later after I heard it. That to me was just, when I heard that, I was like, that he's such a Memphis player.
Yeah.
It would make complete sense. I would love, he would have been the new age Tony Allen.
He would have been really fun there. You know who I'd love to see him go to? New Orleans.
Oh.
Because they just need a wing so badly.
And he's, even though he's 6'4", he's so strong
and
athletic that he can play the three.
Yeah.
I would love that. Yeah. That's a good one.
I don't think it's possible, but I'd like to see it. But
What
do you think is coming down the pike? Because, Casey Johnson reported the internal assumption is that a big move is coming. You think it's just a Melo salary dump?
It seems that way because the numbers kind of line up now to a Cristiano Felicio for Carmelo Anthony trade.
Yep.
Now, what's interesting is we don't really know what's attached. So let's get into the numbers a little bit. If OKC decides to waive and stretch Carmelo Anthony, he's going to be on their cap for 3 years at $9.3 million. Cristiano Felicio is earning about $8 million a year over the next three. So you can say, like, if you look at it through those glasses, like, is it 9.3 compared to 8? But Cristiano Felicio would be an active player who actually gets traded.
Right.
So he could get salary dumped at a later date.
Yeah.
Or he could actually turn into something good there. And, so there's that element to it.
And I'm seeing now, his salary actually decreases every year. It does. So that's
another thing. That's another asset
for OKC.
Yes, he is becoming easier and easier to move as his contract progresses because the cap is going to rise. So his percentage cap hold is going to decline every year.
Yep.
Okay, so the Bulls cleared just enough for that deal to work.
Mm-hmm.
So the debate now is, what's a fair return?
Right.
Like, what are OKC going to send to Chicago for the Bulls to absorb Melo's deal?
That was my next question.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That there are several things in play. You could consider the 2022 first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. A lot of people are mentioning, well, if they take back Cristiano Felicio, who has, you know, another 3 years left on his deal, a 2022 first rounder might prove too rich. And I get the logic in doing that, or in saying that at least. Then there's the whole Terrence Ferguson plus some second rounders option.
Uh-huh.
Which is intriguing, and it would give Gar Forman a chance to say, well, we look at it as having gotten another, you know, first round draft pick.
Yep.
So I think those are the two options at play. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine the Bulls doing all of these things just for a second rounder.
Right.
I cannot imagine it.
Yeah.
Like Sean Kilpatrick, you didn't need to move him now, you didn't need to cut him now. He was like on a non-guaranteed salary for pretty far ahead in the future. Like you could have waited.
Right.
And he's not a bad player.
Yeah.
Someone is going to pick him up.
Yeah, and the same thing with Nwaba. Like
Nwaba for sure. Like he was the Bulls' second best player.
Right. Yeah. You've been very much on team. They need to re-sign him, and he's going to be a steal.
Right.
So.
And now I'm on the entire league is not watching if this guy is on the market for long.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree that it does seem like a Melo deal is the most likely. I mean, I thought Denver, it was clear that Denver needed to get off of those deals. I thought Denver was a possibility too, but clearly they dumped that onto Brooklyn already. There's still like Luol Deng's still out there, Ryan Anderson's still out there, Evan Turner's still out there. There are other teams that want to dump salary, but all of those guys are still on 2-year deals. If the Bulls really do fancy themselves as 2019 free agent contenders, they may be less inclined to do that.
Right. Here's the thing about the Bulls there. Whenever they kind of make it transparent through the media what plan they're on.
Right.
It's always like a 2008, 2010, 2014, whatever plan.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever that, you know, the year of the plan has sort of been revealed publicly, they always stick to it regardless. Like it's just like it's like white on rice.
Mm.
So I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah.
Meaning, I don't think it's a Luol Deng contract.
Yeah.
Or it's a Ryan Anderson. Besides, if it was, you wouldn't have to rescind Nwaba. You wouldn't have to move or cut Sean Kilpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things just line up perfectly for a Melo deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So what's the lowest you would take him back for if you were the Bulls?
The absolute lowest, like if I'm pressed to my very means.
Yeah.
Terrence Ferguson and a second rounder.
Interesting. But
that's the lowest. And even then, I would look back at that whole endeavor and I would go, if I end up losing David Nwaba for this, ultimately, because right now he's fair game.
Yeah.
Then I would hate it.
Yeah.
Every part of it I would hate. If I get Nwaba back, however, that's a different story.
Right.
So if we acknowledge like the uncertainty of the David Nwaba thing, 2022 unprotected first round draft pick.
Wow. Interesting. Well, I was gonna say, like, the Denver trade probably set the market for what to expect. Like it's probably gonna be protected. Somewhere in like the top 10 to lottery range.
Right, but remember this is a reflection of what I feel about David Nwaba.
Right.
Because if I lose him because of that, I know that it doesn't work out like that. Obviously,
right.
Like you have to look at it from, you know, in a vacuum. But I'm saying that if the Bulls lose him, it better be for an unprotected 2022 pick.
Mm-hmm.
It better be. That's where I stand on it personally, because it just wouldn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have a feeling the reason we're saying it's a 2022 first is because OKC already owes a 2020 first, I believe, to the Magic. That is, that pick's been traded like 15 times already. But I think that was the one Philly sent to the Magic last year for Pasechniks. And yeah, I think that's the one they got from, that's the one they got for Nerlens, I think. The fake first. It's like top 20 protected. But because of the Stepien rule, they can't trade a first rounder. OKC cannot trade a first rounder till 2022, which is, you're not
right
saying,
because they didn't, they don't have one on their books,
right?
Like if they acquired one
right
beforehand, they
right.
Yeah,
they could exactly. Yeah, you're not saying like you want it to be in the 2022 draft. It's just like that's the reality.
Exactly.
That's the earliest.
If I had a choice, 2021.
Yeah. Right.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that's interesting about 2022. At that point, Russell Westbrook is not going to be as good as he is right now.
Right.
He's going to be 34? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Somewhere around
34.
There,
34. Yeah, 34. Paul George is also going to be like in his start 30s.
Well, he'll be off their books, I think, right?
Yeah, but he would just have completed that last year.
Oh, yeah.
He signed for. So that
right,
so his
right,
impact
right.
from the season
well,
to the draft pick would.
If he picks up the player option.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I forgot he had a player option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's 3+1.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, but yeah, the 2022 is definitely interesting.
Right.
I don't know. I think that's the one in play. I think that's the most realistic one, but I do agree with you that I think it's going to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the protection. Like if you were the Bulls and it was the 2022 pick protection-wise, how low would you go?
I think
on the protection.
I mean, obviously, ideally, you would love it to be unprotected. I think,
right.
Based on what Denver did, I think top 12 is probably the fair top 12, top 10. Like, I don't think I would do it for a lottery protected one.
No, right? I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like OKC saves a lot more money than Denver did.
Right. It's like 100 million versus 50 or whatever.
Is it still 100 million if Felicio is coming back? I think it's a little less though.
I thought it was if they stretched him, it was 100 million, which would be effectively
the
same.
Then it's even more.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Really?
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought it was 100 million if a team absorbed his entire deal.
Oh, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that because they're, I'm pretty sure they're in the repeater tax right now, if memory serves correctly. So I think because of that.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Either
it's,
way,
it's ridiculous.
It's, yeah, it's significantly more than what Denver shaved, and you can. I mean, from the Bulls' perspective, getting out of Felicio's deal is like that is also
positive.
Valuable, especially if you're going for free agents next year. Like that,
right.
That's a plus. You shave 8 million or 8.2 million off your cap sheet for 2019-20. So,
which could be spent on David Nwaba.
right. So yeah, I'd say probably like top 12 protected is the lowest I would do it for, but I would love it to be top 10, top 5 unprotected, anywhere in that range.
Is there a world when they could go like top 15 or top lottery protected for 2022?
Oh, and then
if it's
like
not convicted,
decreasing protections.
Decrease. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as it needs to not be a bullshit fake first, like what the Sixers got for Nerlens. It can't be like.
No.
Only
it just
protected
should never convert
year.
To a second rounder.
Right.
Should never convert like to a second rounder.
Right.
Should be like lottery protected 2022, like top 10 protected 2023.
Yeah.
And then down the line until like literally unprotected.
Right, like top 5 2024, unprotected 2025, something like that.
Yeah.
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 I would do that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because, you know, I was DMing you this morning about this. Like, it seems as though one and done's from all of the reporting will be removed in 2021. So that draft class projects to be especially loaded because you're going to have all of the one and done's from that class plus all
right.
the guys coming straight out of high school. But like at a certain point, especially some of the college guys are going to say, well, if we come back for a year, like we're not going to be competing with as much talent in next year's draft class. Like I might be,
right, we're not going to get screwed.
Right. Like I might be like the number 25 pick in this class, or I could be like the number 12 pick in next year's class. So I'm going to come back next year. Like I think there's, mm-hmm. I think you teams should be going after 2021 first right now, but I think there's also value in going after 2022. So I actually think that pick, if I was Chicago, even if OKC had their own 2020 pick, I would prefer one after the one and done cutoff. I would prefer the 2022 one over the 2021.
So I'm going to interrupt you because here's something interesting.
Oh boy.
T-Wolves All-Star Jimmy Butler has officially turned down the Wolves' four-year, $110 million range extension offer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep.
He can make a lot more. It's like it's the same thing. This was overblown when Kyrie said he was turning down the Celtics' offer. Like, all of these guys can make a shit ton more by becoming free agents.
What's interesting to me, though, is he is sort of gambling on himself again after the meniscus tear.
Yeah, that's true. I think he just hates it in Minnesota. I don't think he wants to
I wouldn't
stay
be surprised.
There.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He wants to team up with Kyrie. I think there's legitimate truth to that because the Bulls, we were just talking about the Bulls, they were actually rumored to be able to get Kyrie. Kyrie actually wanted to go to Chicago to play with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and instead they traded Jimmy.
And instead they just traded Jimmy because... Bulls. I don't know.
Because Bulls. Yeah. All right, that's probably a good place to wrap up. We will do, barring any major surprises over the weekend, we're planning to do a summer league pod before I head out on vacation. And then we will have at least one pod go out toward the end of next week, a very special surprise. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
We've been teasing about that for a while
now. We're finally going to let the beast go. And then, yeah, hopefully Mort and I are actually going to meet in person in about a week and a half. So
hopefully.
Well, no, we will meet in person, barring...
I'm looking forward to like the 23rd. We'll sit there, we'll have breakfast prepared, and you don't show up.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Hey, you know what? We want to be in Denmark. We don't want to meet up with you anyway. So
I was going to say, like, as long as there's no catastrophic plane crash, knock on wood, we will be meeting each other in a week and a half, but hopefully we'll remember to do a live podcast then. So... lots of fun around the corner. But until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm going to go back to watching Wendell Carter Jr. destroying summer league competition.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of Wendell Carter talk in our next episode.
And rightly so.
Right. Everyone get excited. Honestly, you could just re-listen to our old podcast in which Mort already told you Wendell Carter was going to be good.
Which one? There were quite a few.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Just go back to any pre-draft podcast you probably
and also
about
if
it.
You want to hear about Wendell Carter, I just recorded a podcast with Mark Karansoulis last night where we did talk, but that was mostly Bulls specific summer league. It was overall Bulls HQ podcast, so I'm there on the last episode if you're interested.
Awesome. Yeah, give that a listen. All right, have a good weekend, Mort.
You too, Brian.